In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thanks so much for joining us, and happy Friday, friends.
Happy Friday, bro.
Kelly's back.
Yay!
Yay!
Hello!
Let's meet the crew. I'm Brett Molina. I play video games. And my pick for Oscars host is Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, because I think they'd be absolutely hilarious.
My name is Brian Truitt. I watch movies, and I will be watching the Oscars. And my pick for Oscars host, who won't be hosting the Oscars, is John Mulaney.
Or Spider-Ham. They could just
both.
Both. They could interact.
That's the thing. You can do both.
My name is Kelly Lawler. I watch TV, and I will be watching the Oscars. And my pick for Oscar host would be Mr. George Clooney, who charmed the pants off of my fellow TV critics the other week in Los Angeles while he was promoting Catch-22 on Hulu. And doesn't have to worry about backlash ever in his life ever.
He doesn't even have to say anything. He just shows up.
I mean, he
shows up,
to
gives
my
a
soul.
Wink. He's all set.
He looked directly at me. I mean, I was sitting 30 feet away from him and there were stage lights in his eyes, but he looked directly at me.
Were you having that classic cartoon moment where you're kind of floating in midair as George is looking at you?
Hearts were coming out of my eyes. My eyes were coming out of my head. Although, hilariously, the Hulu publicist right before the panel was like, remember, no photography is allowed in the ballroom. I wonder why she felt the need to say that.
I can't imagine. Goodness. If this is your first time listening to us, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership drop every Friday. And you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen. And hey, while you're on Apple Podcasts, it would be lovely if you could write a quick review about the show. By doing that, you'll be helping other fans who love nerdy pop culture find us. And as a thank you, we'll give you a very special shout out on our next episode. I mean, if there was like an award at the Oscars for best listener, it would be you if you gave us a review. It'd be really appreciated.
Seriously. And it wouldn't be given out during the commercials.
Exactly. Right on air. You'd actually be probably right after Best Picture, honestly, if it was us.
Got to be before. Everyone turns it off after Best Picture, which is why they thought La La Land won.
See, this is why Kelly knows way more than I do. So anyway, try it out and tell us what you want to see moving forward. It's all upside for you. Don't forget, along with leaving your review, you can also get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at MothershipPod, or you can send an email to mothershippod@usatoday.com. Main topic this week, as you probably could tell, it's Oscar season. It's Oscar time. Here's a clip.
I've searched for it. Called it El Dorado. They looked for it in South America. But it was in Africa the whole time. I'm the only one who's seen it and made it out alive.
The world is changing. Soon, there will only be the conquered and the conquerors.
Step into the spotlight.
You are a good man.
Step into the spotlight.
With a good heart. And it's hard for a good man to be a king.
That was from Black Panther, the only geek kind of theme nominee for Best Picture at the 91st Academy Awards, which takes place Sunday. So we're here to get you ready, or if you happen to hear this after Sunday, you can still enjoy our witty banter and hopefully smart choices for who might win this year. Before we get into all that, let's start with the broadcast itself. They are going without a host this year. Is this going to work? How do we feel about this? I think they've done this once before and it wasn't great.
It was in the 80s.
30 years ago.
30 years ago. It is most memorable for a terrible opening number in which Rob Lowe sang with a Snow White, played by like a random actress who was no name, that everybody hated. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be great, right? No, it's going to suck. I am of the opinion that some award shows do not need a host. The Screen Actors Guild Awards does not need a host. The Golden Globes could do either or. But the Oscars need a host because the people who tune into the smaller award shows are there strictly for the awards and are in on all the I'm an actor in jokes and that kind of thing. And they're short, and so you don't need that much help. But the Oscars has a huge audience. A lot of people haven't seen the movies. You want to keep them entertained through things that they don't know that well or don't understand. And even if it's a bad hosts make great television. We all like to trash things together. It's just like Smash, but longer. With more montages. Do you know what they should get rid of instead of getting rid of awards or whatever? ABC is obsessed with making it a 3-hour show this year. Get rid of the freaking montages.
Yeah, I feel like they've got 100 of those during every broadcast. It's kind of insane. Brian, what do you think, though?
Having a host isn't a bad thing. I feel like, you know, kind of it does work for SAGs. And I think, you know, kind of with Alicia Keys doing the Grammy Awards, you have someone who's an interesting personality and not a good host. And it's just like, you know, I think, you know, they put her in there for some name value. But I don't, other than like bringing kind of Michelle Obama, Lady Gaga and other people like kind of on stage as her little sisterhood, which was kind of a cool moment. I don't think she added a lot to that broadcast, but she didn't need to because there was a bunch of whole, you know, music acts, you know, 3 hours of music acts after her. So I think inherently, I think they could pull off having no host if they thought about it like a year prior. And had like, you know, and had people set up where like it was like George Clooney leads to Brad Pitt leads to Chadwick Boseman. You know, I think you could do it in a fun way with presenters. Here's the fact, though. You now had like apparently Dwayne Johnson was the first person who asked, but he said no. And it ended up that Kevin Hart got the, you know, he got the choice. He said no. And this was like, and then there was all that kind of controversy with him. This was just kind of like a few months ago. And now we've had issues with, oh, well, we're not going to televise 4 awards because we want it to be shorter. Then they've now reversed that decision because of public outcry. So there's no planning going on whatsoever at this point. So I think what could have worked with like no host, you know, and a year of planning now kind of goes out the window with like no hosts and like a few weeks of planning.
Yeah. And another thing, they had all that controversy over whether or not the best song nominees would perform.
Oh, that too.
And what I think is funny is they kind of reversed on that, or at least like felt the need to publicly confirm that they would have all the nominees perform after Lin-Manuel Miranda chastised them.
And Lady Gaga
And then when I was at TCA, we did this thing, an executive session where the heads of networks come out and answer questions from the press for like half an hour. And Carrie Burke, who's the new president of ABC, came out and got a lot of questions about the Oscars, as you might expect. And one of the things she said about like the no host aspect of the show was that we have great music. It's going to be a great music show regardless. And I'm like, the idea that like it was that that's what you're plugging when it was in question whether or not you would utilize that great music just to me means no one is on the same page. No one knows what this is going to be. There's no overarching theme. Like when Ellen hosted the Oscars, whatever you think of Ellen, the theme of that Oscars was niceness and best friends. They did the pizza. They did the selfies. Everyone got through it amicably. When Seth MacFarlane hosted the Oscars, the theme was the youth and the meanness, and it didn't work, but there was like a theme. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what these Oscars are going to be. The theme is chaos. The theme is anger. The theme is trying to get Whiskey Cavalier in at 11 p.m. on ABC.
I don't trust them to do this at all, considering we're just removed a couple years ago from them completely flubbing the Best Picture winner. And between that and everything that's going on now, I mean, like you said earlier, I think it's going to be a really bad show, but I think it's just going to be hilarious to watch as for all the wrong reasons. And
it's the best they can hope for, honestly.
Really? I mean, they're going to go viral for all the wrong reasons.
Well,
probably.
Yeah. I honestly think from like a programming perspective, they probably picked no host, A, because like it was going to be hard and the person, they probably couldn't find someone who really wanted to do it after all the controversy. And B, because I bet they thought a lot of people would tune in out of morbid curiosity to see it become a train wreck.
So why do people not want to host the Oscars? Is it just the reputation that precedes it as far as, you know, it was Billy Crystal for the longest time, and then we've had other hosts since. But it always seems like, for the most part, you tend to – it doesn't really help at all, I guess. I don't know. What is it – why do people just don't seem interested in hosting the show?
Well, what's the upside?
Exactly. It's kind of a thankless gig. And for a while, it was something that really raised your profile. But I think especially when David Letterman hosted the Oscars, and he was on this, like, giant career upswing – and then he hosted the Oscars and did Oprah, Uma, Uma, Oprah. And it kind of, you know, screwed him over for a while in his career. And not that you can say that you blame that for him, like, eventually, like, falling in the ratings behind Leno. But it was all around the same time. And he had, like, done no wrong. And then he hosted the Oscars. And people were like, well, that sucked. You know, so it can be triumphant. But a lot of times, there are so many ways to disappoint. People always remember the bad stuff. You know, Neil Patrick Harris is one of the few people, I think, who was, like, excited and to host the Oscars. And he had that whole thing where it was, like, on his bucket list. And it was a train wreck. And, you know, what is he doing these days besides a children's show on Netflix?
But, and also the best Oscar hosts, you know, your Billy Crystals and your Steve Martins, don't need it. They had career. I mean, they're like, you know, a Weinstein moment maybe would tear them down. But otherwise, I mean, kind of their legacies are set as, you know, icons. And so they have nothing to lose and they can be themselves and everything would be fine. And then you have something like James Franco and Anne Hathaway together, which somebody thought that was a good idea.
And for the youth.
Yeah. And like it didn't work out for either. And, you know, and now they're still sniping each other like years later about the fact of what a debacle that was. So, I mean, if you're going to do something like that, you get a Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman could totally screw that up, which I think, didn't he do it? Yeah, he did it once.
Oh, he did it.
And he was
one of the best Oscar hosts in, like, since 2000, in my opinion.
Because he has his, like, career. I mean, like, no matter what happens, people are still going to love him afterward. Same thing with, you know, Steve Martin, same with Billy Crystal. And Jimmy Kimmel, too, to a certain degree. I mean, these people are kind of like, you know, they have their lane and they kind of stick to it. It's when you start pulling people out from, like, you know, the hinterlands, like, you know, James Franco and Anne Hathaway or, you know, kind of Neil Patrick Harris to a certain degree. That's when you start kind of like messing stuff up and where they're not comfortable and you're not comfortable with them. And, you know, kind of and it's so it could go badly that way.
What I think Hugh Jackman got that so many people don't get is that the Oscar hosting job is not necessarily a comedy performance. It is a stage performance. And so the way that was planned out, and he had writers and producers who helped. So it's like obviously not all him, but, you know, he has a long Broadway career. And so he brought pacing to his. He had that great opening musical number that was like fun and funny and nice and short. You know what I mean? And he knew like when to come in and when to go out. And you know how to play to the back and play to the front at the same time. And that is a skill that is not inherent to people who write sitcoms like Seth MacFarlane. Who, sure, he's a funny guy to some people, not to me. But to some people, he's really funny. But if you don't have... And I mean, he knows how to sing and dance. And he did a bunch of that. But he's not like a real trained stage performer. Like the stand-up comedians do better than like the writer comedians. Or like the behind-the-desk guys. You know what I mean? It's a balancing act. And it is something that you really only get better at if you do like an 8 shows a week kind of thing. Or you're at the stand-up club every Friday and Saturday. So... I think, you know, names that a lot of people throw out there, I think would be really great, but I think they have to have the right experience. So like Tiffany Haddish, who everyone loves, would probably be good because she's done a lot of stand up. Like a Maya Rudolph or anyone from SNL has more of an upper hand than a lot of other people. But I don't like Kevin Hart's stand up. I don't like Kevin Hart in general. I don't think he would have, like from a pacing perspective, I don't think he would have done well.
And James Corden would do better than him just because you have stage experience.
Oh, yeah.
And you have, and maybe not stand-up comedy, but you have somebody who like can riff with people and but has the kind of like the pacing like you said. I think he kind of that would be a person kind of that would work. You know, I don't Kevin Hart, I think you'd get him for name value, but I don't think he adds anything.
Yeah.
And I think Dwayne Johnson would have probably
I think he could have done it.
No, I think he would have struggled probably because I think, you know, oh no, I take that back because he had wrestling, you know. So it's just like I think because like so that's probably where you were going.
The
wrestling would probably have helped him there too.
I thought of wrestling before you did.
My brain is like fried. So
I'm dying to see Fighting with My Family. Fun fact about Kelly. But
he's playing himself, so I mean that's one of his best characters.
So before we get into the nominees, we touched on this briefly a couple weeks ago, but were there any major snubs that jumped out as far as nominees this year?
I just rewatched Crazy Rich Asians again, and I'm still really sad that it didn't get anything. I think especially it should have gotten an adapted screenplay nomination after I read the book in between the two times I've watched it. The book is really good, but it's way soapier and way beach readier, if that makes sense. There's like all these like crazy elaborate backstories and small spoiler alert. For instance, there's like the subplot in the movie about the main guy's cousin, Astrid, who's played by Gemma Chan. Her husband cheats on her in the movie. In the book, he pretends to cheat on her to try to force her to divorce him, which is just like overly complicated and that kind of thing. And there are a bunch of other really, really smart decisions they made between that book and movie. And I just, it's sad. It's sad that they're missing that moment in our lives because I think it was a really great moment. And that movie is going to live on far longer than Green Book.
I know it got nominated for Best Picture, but I'm surprised Black Panther didn't get nominated for a little bit more in that, particularly in the acting categories. I would have thought that Chadwick Boseman or another actor in the film would have gotten nominated, but... Yeah, it's just I guess at least we have Best Picture, but I'm kind of surprised no one got nominated in the acting categories. Brian, was there anyone that jumped out snub wise?
Oh yeah, Michael B. Jordan should have gotten a supporting actor nomination for Black Panther. I think Kelly's right. Crazy Rich Asians should have gotten a Best Picture nomination. I think that and 50 other Best Picture nominations should have came before Bohemian Rhapsody. That's just me, though. And I feel like Chadwick Boseman should have been there instead of Rami Malek, but no one asked me. So
I asked you, Brian.
Yes, you did, but that's it.
Oh, one more quick thing before we dig into our picks and who we want to win this year at the Oscars. If you're looking for a really cool experience this year, head to the USA Today app. There's a really fun augmented reality experience where you can get a behind-the-scenes look at some of the costumes for this year's Best Picture nominees, including Bohemian Rhapsody, Black Panther, Black Klansman.
All the ones that start with B.
Yes.
No, and all the other ones, too.
Yeah, the rest of them, too. But it's really cool. You get a lot of good insight into what went into designing these outfits for all these Best Picture nominees. So it's really fun. It's really cool. Check it out on the USA Today app. Just scroll down to the section where it says augmented reality, and you'll find it. So...
It's like Pokemon Go, but with clothes, which actually sounds like a horrible selling point. I take that back. No one listened to me. It's really cool.
I think some people still play Pokemon Go, though.
Oh, I know them.
Basically, you can put like a Black Panther costume on your table and then look at it and see all this cool stuff. It's really fun. It's really cool. We tried it for a little bit. It's great.
Highly recommend the Black Panther one and the favorite one as they are some of the more intricate costumes. I mean, like Bohemian Rhapsody is tank top.
Yeah, velvet pajama.
You can find that anywhere, really. Okay, let's dig in. So we picked a few of kind of the higher profile categories, and so we'll dig in and talk about who we want to win, who we think will win, et cetera, et cetera. Let's start with animated feature film, which is the unofficial category for parents because it's pretty much the only movies they see now. The nominees are Incredibles 2, Isle of Dogs, Mirai, Ralph Breaks the Internet, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'm going with Spider-Verse. I really want them to win.
I was about to say, like, on three.
Yeah, it's gonna win. It's gonna win.
It's gonna be Spider-Man.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Original song: When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs for Wings from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, All the Stars from Black Panther, I'll Fight from RBG, The Place Where Lost Things Go from Mary Poppins Returns, and Shallow from A Star Is Born. Who do we want to win, or who do we think's gonna win?
Ah.
Yeah. So Shallow wins that going away, too.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get one last look at you before you go.
Hey, Brett.
Kelly, who's your pick?
Oh, boy, we're far from it. Yeah.
Well, my current pick for best actor is Brett Molina.
Thank you.
But no, we're supposed to do directing now, right?
Yeah. No, we're at song. Did you already?
We're still song. I mean.
Oh well, you already picked yours. That's right.
I mean, I sang the ahs.
That's there we
go. The ahs themselves deserve an Oscar.
I think we were so overwhelmed. Yeah.
So before we go out of that, this though, something I'm really upset about though.
Uh huh.
They're having Bette Midler sing "The Place Where Lost Things Go."
I know.
I hate Bette Midler.
Well, I mean, I don't hate Bette Midler.
Wow.
But
have Emily Blunt sing. Have Emily Blunt friggin' sing.
I really dislike the thing where they bring in someone else to sing the song. And, like, sometimes maybe that person isn't available or they don't want to sing or they have to sing too many things. Like, I remember when Enchanted had, like, a bunch of songs nominated. Amy Adams sang one and then they brought in Kristen Chenoweth to sing the other one. Okay, fair. But you're missing, like, the experience of the movie. One of the things I love about the Oscars is that everybody gets to experience part of these movies, maybe if they haven't been able to, like, get out to the theaters or they can't afford to go to the theaters, which is why when they don't include clips for the nominees, especially in the acting and best picture categories, I think it's, you know, I call complete bull because that was my favorite part as a kid, to get to see clips of the movies that, especially, like, if they were, like, rated R or something. You know, I'm like, oh, when I grow up, I get to see Titanic finally. That was PG-13, but I was still too young. Like, that is a really cool part. And Academy, if you have more time because of the lack of a host, maybe do a clip or something like it for every nominee in every category. Thank you.
But going back, so Emily, okay, let's say Emily Blunt can't sing this live. I think she can. I believe in you, Emily. But even if she says no, have Lin-Manuel Miranda sing the darn thing. He's from the movie. He's Lin-Manuel Miranda. We want to get him an Oscar at some point. This would help. But no, Bette Midler. Just shoot me.
Well, we know the part of the Oscars that Brian is turning his TV off.
I can't turn the TV off. I'm going to be sitting here writing the whole thing as it goes. I cannot turn the TV off.
He's suffering.
I have to sit through it.
He's suffering for you, everyone. He's suffering for all of us.
I am.
Okay, let's move on to directing. The nominees are Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Spike Lee for Black Klansman, Pavel Pavlikowski for Cold War, Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favorite, and Adam McKay for Vice.
You nailed that Adam McKay one, man.
I practiced Spike Lee too for a good half hour.
Like
it
whoever
was
is going to be presenting Best Director, Brett just spent a little time practicing pronunciations.
Yes,
I helped
you,
him.
It pays off
with Adam McKay, and Brian helped him with Spike Lee.
I did.
Their help was immeasurable. I cannot.
Spike Lee.
I really want Spike Lee to win just because I like Spike Lee.
I do too. He should have won. He should have won for Do the Right Thing. He probably should have won for Malcolm X.
Yeah, I would love it if this was his, like, Departed. I don't think it's going to happen, though.
Nope.
I mean, I would be totally fine with Alfonso Cuarón winning, too, though, because I love Roma, and it was so personal to him. I loved Children of Men, and I didn't necessarily think it got the acclaim it deserved or the awards attention it deserved. So, again, I wouldn't mind him getting it as a career kind of thing.
But he's won already.
Yeah.
So here's my thing. I don't love Roma. I'm like one of the only people who doesn't like Roma, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. I think he is going to win. I think Spike Lee deserves to win. If Spike Lee doesn't win, I think Pavel Pavlikowski should win. Cold War's like exceedingly better than Roma as like kind of a cool black and white personal foreign film kind of thing. Go see Cold War. It's fantastic. And I think something like that would be good. I wouldn't mind Yorgos Lanthimos winning either because the Favorite's fantastic.
Oh, I love The Favorite.
Yeah, but I mean I'm personally rooting for Spike.
I'm rooting for Spike too. I think
he's not going to win though.
He's not going to win.
No.
Anything can happen.
That's true.
Well, as long as Adam McKay doesn't win. No offense, Adam McKay. I think you're great.
He should have won for Step Brothers. Honestly,
really?
Step
Did we
Brothers
just become best friends?
Yep.
I mean, the acting categories are missing these two guys next to me. My goodness.
Legendary. Okay, supporting actress. The nominees are Amy Adams in Vice, Marina de Tavira in Roma, Regina King in If Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone in The Favorite, and Rachel Weisz in The Favorite. I really want Regina King to win because
Regina
she
King
is she deserves it more than I think anybody in this group, honestly.
She's going to win.
She is going to win.
But Rachel Weisz should win because she is fantastic. She's, I mean, she is fantastic in most everything she does. But in The Favorite, it's one of
she
those
is
things
really
where,
good.
Yeah, I mean, she's really good. I think Regina King is really great. And If Beale Street Could Talk, but I think Rachel Weisz kind of gives a more well-rounded, ranging performance because I mean, kind of she plays comedy, she plays drama, she plays a little bit of everything in that role. So
she draws a mustache with mud.
She throws books at Emma Stone.
She shoots things. She gets blood on her face. A big disgrace.
She almost loses an eye too. So
waving her banner all over the place.
Supporting actor.
The nominees are Mahershala Ali in Green Book, Sam Elliott in A Star is Born, Adam Driver in Black Klansman, Richard E. Grant in Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Sam Rockwell in Vice. Sam Elliott should have won for Roadhouse, honestly, but I guess if you got
Sam Elliott should win here. But he's not
going
to.
I guess
we
have to talk about Green Book now.
Yes, Green Book. For those who haven't totally been caught up on everything that's happened with this movie, quick synopsis.
There's so much.
There's so much.
Where do
we have? We have the director who exposes his penis to people.
Yep.
We have the writer who's a pro Trumper. Yeah. So if you like.
Oh, Trump, and thinks he can heal racism with this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think as a movie, you know, kind of taking out the social element. I mean, it does a lot of good. It does a lot of things. Well, it's not a great film, but it does what it needs to do to be like the, you know, your mom's favorite movie on TNT from like for the next 20 years. I think, I mean, that, you know, if that's kind of what it's trying to be, it's kind of like Driving Miss Daisy kind of in reverse. So I think it succeeds at that. But I think, you know, the people who have problems with it, you know, have and take issues with it are right too.
Yeah. Another thing was that the family of the character that Mahershala Ali plays, Don Shirley, is adamantly against the movie and even talked about how Don Shirley never wanted this story told as a movie very specifically. But like now he's dead, so he couldn't advocate for himself. And Mahershala Ali apologizes to the family. But like, what about all the white producers and filmmakers who are involved with this movie? So that really bothered me. I feel exactly the same as Brian. I mean, I think that people enjoy it. I think it's the best, you know, TNT movie from 1996. the way that Bridge of Spies felt like it was from 1996. But it should have been like, we watched it when it came out in theaters. We discussed all this controversy and then it went away. The fact that it has had such strength in the Oscar race is baffling to me.
Oh, it's not baffling. I think that, you know, the Academy has you know, changed its voting block a little bit, and you know, kind of you have a more diverse population there. You know, they are younger, but it's still mostly old white guys, and this is this is racism for old white guys.
Yeah, because it's like you can be racist, but don't worry, you're still the good guy.
Yeah.
But anyway, Mahershala Ali is still a wonderful man,
and he's really good in that role.
Yeah.
It's not like his best role. It's not like, you know, on True Detective is probably his best role ever, probably at this point. And Moonlight, he's fantastic. I mean, the only thing I've ever seen him like suck in is Alita: Battle Angel. And I mean, I think there's a lot of issues with that in terms of plot
know he
and
was
everything.
In that.
Yes. Oh, yes, he is. you know, so that's not going to go down on his resume probably as a high point. But I mean, the guy's a great actor. I don't know what his personal feelings are about what's going on in the movie and why he took it. And who knows? I don't speak for Mahershala Ali. But what he does with the role is really good. So I would personally rather, like, you know, Sam Elliott is, you know, it's fantastic in A Star is Born. I think that's kind of
Richard E. Grant.
Yeah, he's good. Adam Driver, I think he's going to get an Oscar one of these days. You know, whether it's Black Klansman or something else, but he's going to get one. Sam Rockwell just you know, won last year, so that's fine. I mean, I think that it's a packed crowd here. So, but I don't have any problems with Mahershala winning.
If Green Book has to get something, I would rather it be only this.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Best Actress category. The nominees are Yalitza Aparicio for Roma, Glenn Close for The Wife, Olivia Colman for The Favorite, Lady Gaga in A Star is Born, and Melissa McCarthy in Can You Ever Forgive Me? I really want Melissa McCarthy to win. Or Lady Gaga. I think either one I'd be really happy with. Who would you guys pick?
A 5-way tie.
Everybody wins.
Actually, I mean, I like everyone in this category. I think I want Lady Gaga to win. Because weirdly, A Star is Born has become the underdog after like opening award season and being the favorite. I also really like The Favorite. And Olivia Colman is one of my favorite actresses of all time. If you haven't seen her in any interviews on this press tour for The Favorite, especially on Graham Norton or other British press, she's so funny. She's just so funny. She tells a story on Graham Norton that I absolutely cannot tell on this podcast because we can't even bleep it away. But it's so funny.
Check it out.
It's about Emma Stone. You'll find it.
Brian, who do you think is going to win?
I think Glenn Close wins.
Yeah.
But I think Glenn Close wins for Fatal Attraction. Mm-hmm. She wins for The Natural.
I was just going to say.
She wins for Dangerous Liaisons. I mean,
it's a career award.
Oh, basically. Yeah. She's pulling a Denzel. I mean, she's going to get an award for the fact that this, you know, she has been nominated 7 times and has never won. This is why she wins. But if we do like just movie to movie, if we don't be like, let's give her a career Oscar now, Lady Gaga should win. Hands down. She freaking sings. I mean, she sings and acts. And I like, you know, we knew she could sing. But I mean, the fact that, you know, kind of she can really act too. And the fact that she melds everything together. And I, you know, kind of the reason why the first 40 minutes of A Star Was Born are probably the best 40 minutes of any movie this year, that first 40 minutes, is because of her. And it's because of her and Bradley Cooper finding this interesting kind of like dynamic together. But it is mostly her, I think.
And because she was so involved with the songwriting, that adds a whole dynamic to that character that is part of her performance, but hard to sort of put into words for an award. So obviously, like, she's someone who would get an Oscar if Shallow wins, when Shallow wins. But there's so many complicated levels to what she does singing those things. She's not Stefani Germanotta doing karaoke. She's not Lady Gaga doing Lady Gaga pop songs. It's so incredible, and it's so surprising because people didn't know her for much but The Meat Dress. Well, and then her, like, sort of career resurgence. Courtesy of the Oscars, by the way. Courtesy of Singing Sound of Music at the Oscars. See? The Oscars can help your career, potential hosts of Hollywood.
Yeah, just don't host the show and you're fine. okay, moving on to Best Actor. Nominees are Christian Bale in Vice, Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born, Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, Viggo Mortensen in Green Book, and Willem Dafoe in At Eternity's Gate. Who you got?
It's going to be Rami.
Yep. Yep.
I would prefer Bradley.
Yeah, I kind of remember
Excuse me. I would prefer Bradley.
Well, I you know, I think Bradley Cooper, I don't mind him winning. I think Christian Bale probably should win. That's a hard. I mean, honestly, I'd give him a tie because I think both, you know, with Bradley Cooper, like, also directing the thing, but also friggin' singing and doing justice to this character he's created. But then also, you know, Christian Bale is fantastic. It's pretty much, you know, kind of, Vice isn't a biopic. It is a satire of power in America and of this man we do not know. But, like, dude nails it. Dude's probably our greatest actor right now. I think, or he's up there. And I think, you know, if they could tie, fine. I'd rather go to Christian Bale. I'd honestly probably would vote for Viggo Mortensen over Rami Malek at this point. But it's going to be Rami for some friggin' reason.
I'm kind of bummed Bradley Cooper's not up for director only because it would have been fun to see the double where he gets director and actor. But
well, then here's the thing. I think that helps him, though, in this.
Yeah, because he has a snub.
Yeah.
And that's why Argo won Best Picture. Because Ben Affleck didn't get nominated for director.
Yep.
Ah.
I don't think we're going to repeat that this
year.
No. Perhaps. Probably not. But I think, you know, I think a lot of people thought he should get a Best Director thing. I mean, I did too. I feel like, you know, kind of. But that there's a lot of great directors out this year. So I that snub didn't mind me as much as like the fact that Rami Malek's gonna win a best actor for this. Mm-hmm. That bothers me because dude is all teeth. His portrayal of Freddie Mercury is all about is having teeth, prosthetic teeth. That's his performance,
and he's lip syncing his head,
and he's doing lip sync battle with Queen songs. Whereas you sit here, Bradley Cooper, he's writing original songs. He's not even a singer, but yet he's sitting there rocking out to like Coachella. You know, he is this character, and he's not a singer, but he's singing as his character. He's everything, and you have Rami Malek behind fake teeth lip syncing. But he's going to win Best Actor. So,
well, okay. Final category. We're going to dig into more to Bohemian Rhapsody in a sec. Best Picture nominees are A Star Is Born,
woo!
Roma,
woo!
Green Book,
boo!
The Favorite,
woo!
Black Panther,
woo!
Black Klansman,
woo!
Bohemian Rhapsody,
boo!
Vice.
Boo.
Okay, here's the first question. Should Bohemian Rhapsody even be on this list?
No. Spider-Verse should be here.
Absolutely. That's actually my favorite movie of last year, hands down.
Okay, let's run down.
So what's the history?
I would put Avengers Infinity War before I would put Bohemian Rhapsody.
So talking about Spider-Verse real quick, what is there any history to an animated film being Best Picture or in Best Picture?
Beauty and the Beast, I think, was the first.
Beauty and the Beast was the first. Several Pixar films have been nominated since, including Toy Story 3. And then, technically Avatar is pretty heavily animated.
Yeah, I think we count that as live action.
Yeah. Just like the live-action Lion King, which is made up of computer animation. Whatever. Small pet peeve. But yes, there has been animation nominated for Best Picture, but there hasn't been a superhero movie nominated for Best Picture besides Black Panther. So being animated, being a superhero movie, being so late in the year was what prevented Into the Spider-Verse from even being considered for this race. But I think it was the best movie of 2018. No holds bar.
So is Bohemian Rhapsody in just because the people picking this like Queen and stuff like that? I mean,
I
what's
don't know.
The...
You tell me. I do not understand everybody's love for this. It befuddles me.
I love Queen.
Oh, I do
I'm
too.
Like, I don't think this was a great representation of Queen, even though they were also involved. You know. At some points, they're like, oh, my God, Queen's amazing. Bohemian Rhapsody has to be the single. Like, yeah, that was, like, clearly input from the band. But then at the end, they're all sniping. Freddie is annoying. And they're like, oh, we suck. We can't perform at Live Aid. And then they just recreate Live Aid. What is this movie? It's nothing. It's lip sync battle.
I mean, all that. And I mean, but it's like.
Don't forget the teeth.
Well, the teeth. But I mean, you know, it's like even Crash is better than this.
That is a very
seriously. As bad as Crash
American
was,
American Beauty is better than this.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's just like you wonder why somebody must have watched these and be like, oh, Bohemian Rhapsody is awesome. And, you know, it's just I mean, I know there's probably a lot of Queen fans, but it's made a lot of money. There's a lot of people love this movie, and I just do not get it. So apparently there's a lot of people in the Academy that also love this movie.
Is it the worst Best Picture nominee ever?
Probably not.
God. I mean, I would go with Kelly. Probably not.
It's probably one of the worst ones in several years.
And yeah, in recent history, I can't remember anything worse.
If Bohemian Rhapsody won Best Picture, would it be the worst Best Picture winner ever?
It wouldn't, but it would make my top 10, which you can see on life.usatoday.com. I think it might unseat Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, I really like Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire is a fine film until the very last thing, and they start dancing. Ruined the entire film for me. I'm like, took me out.
It's my
totally.
Favorite part.
Totally. I was just like, why did you start dancing? There's no reason for that. Film was fine. Then you start dancing. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Broadway Melody from like the 20s, but that's bad. Fun fact, first sound film to win Best Picture. The second of all time because it follows Wings, which was actually pretty decent. But yeah, Broadway Melody's terrible. Out of Africa's boring as hell. Yeah. It would be in there, though.
Kelly, go ahead.
Shakespeare in Love.
Yes, that's on there.
Sucks.
English Patient. I mean, I think there's a lot. I mean, Driving Miss Daisy. I think there's a lot of emotion manipulative stuff, a lot of snooze fests that are down there for me, at least.
Dances with Wolves.
I didn't mind it.
The King's Speech?
I didn't mind it. Colin Firth kind of made that movie for me. Don't love it, but like he's good in it.
Birdman. I do hate Birdman more than I hate Bohemian Rhapsody.
Birdman's so good. It's like all one thing kind of going on. Boo. Oh, it's so good. Oh, it's better than Revenant. Better than Revenant. But like, okay, going back, Bohemian Rhapsody, I reviewed it, gave it 2 stars. To me, it was like an ordinary biopic of something, of people who were extraordinary. I did not, in life and in music, I just didn't understand. You know, I was just like, why would you do this? But then, like, everybody starts loving it, and, you know, and there's not really critics, but like just everybody else. My mom, you know, I haven't watched it since, and probably because it's bad. But it, you know, I'm angry about it, and maybe I need to go see a therapist or something. But it's just like I do not understand what people see in it, and when I hear people, like my mom's like, oh, but the music was really good.
It's not like they wrote the music.
Well, I can go get like a Queen. I mean, Queen soundtracks are great. Yeah, sure. You know, kind of like, you know, you look at Hot Fuzz and, you know, and
Shaun of the Dead.
And you both use Queen songs in their soundtrack. Does that make them great movies? No, they're kind of great movies because Edgar Wright's an awesome director and they're kind of really neat. Bohemian Rhapsody's in Wayne's World. Really like that Wayne's World part. It's a better use of Bohemian Rhapsody, honestly, in a movie. But it's just Bohemian Rhapsody as a whole. Why? They deserve so much more.
Do you remember what trailer prominently featured the song Bohemian Rhapsody? Suicide Squad.
Oh, that's right. That was a good use of it, too. Not too shabby. Okay, so if we're picking a winner, who are we picking?
Like, I get a vote?
Well, let's start here. Who's the favorite? Is it the favorite or is there another?
I mean, that's a hard question.
I've seen a lot of Roma predictions recently.
Yeah, I mean, I'm predicting Roma to win because I think here's the thing. The Best Picture uses a preferential ballot, whereas all the other categories are just like, you know, when people are, you know, voters are having the ballots, they're like, you know, pick your favorite. And that's pretty much it. Preferential ballot for Best Picture is you rank the, you know, your favorites. So in a situation like this where there's probably, you know, a lot of different number ones on people's lists, your winner's going to come out of like whoever gets the most 2 and 3 votes.
Yeah, I think it doesn't help movies that have a vocal minority. So I think Roma is generally accepted to be like quite an accomplishment, and so people, I think, out of like duty and like, you know, to have like an appropriate ballot, will rank it pretty high. And the people who love Green Book will be number one, but I don't think it's going to be like number one on a lot of people's lists. And the same for like Vice. So I think Roma has a really good chance. I think Bohemian Rhapsody has a decent chance.
But I think also Black Panther has a chance because, and that would be my pick. If I had a vote, that would be my pick. I think people understand that is a huge film, that is a movement more than a film. And I think, you know, kind of even kind of old white guys can probably get behind that to a certain degree. So while it may get some number one votes, it might get more 2 and 3s. And I think something like Roma is going to get a lot of number ones because I think people are going to really find the filmmaking outstanding. But then might get some like 4s and 5s when people are just like, maybe they're anti-Netflix. Maybe they're, you know, kind of like it doesn't connect with them. Like it didn't connect with me. So I think A Star Is Born still has a chance because of that. Green Book still, I think probably it's Roma or Green Book probably has the best chance. But I think Black Klansman has a fighting chance. Black Panther has a fighting chance. I think there's a lot of things that have a fighting chance. I think The Favorite and Vice are probably more on the outside looking in.
If I could pick, I honestly think I'd pick A Star Is Born. I mean, I think it's partially just because I found it to be one of the more surprising experiences of my movie-going year. Whereas I feel bad about how I saw The Favorite because my expectations were so high. I really, really loved it. But I had such high expectations that it still didn't meet it, even though it was like so, so good. I thought it was going to like completely change my life kind of thing. And I just thought it was like very well done. So I kind of feel bad about that. But I really liked Roma, but I don't want Netflix to win Best Picture. I just
really?
Don't. Oh, because they already have enough power. And they want it so bad, and they fight dirty. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but I feel like they fight dirty. I'm like worried I'm never going to get access to another Netflix screener again.
Do you understand how much money they put into that?
I know. It's insane.
It is the most insane thing. Because, as being part of the BFCA, the Broadcast Film Critics Association, you see more about like the actual campaigns. And I find it fascinating. Like how what studios do to kind of be like, you should vote for this. You should vote for this. You should vote for this. And just like, I can't, like the Netflix thing, even like Buster Scruggs, they were like, they kind of went all in on. But Roma was just like, it was insane how much money they must have spent trying to get. I mean, maybe they think it's their only shot for Best Picture. I mean, they got Martin Scorsese's Irishman coming up this year. I feel like that would be probably like something to put more money on.
They just want it now. They want everything now.
Yeah.
They don't want it later.
I mean, and I guess, you know, kind of Roma is now, you know, probably the possible favorite kind of going in. So I perhaps it's worked. I don't know. But it didn't work on me because I just it never spoke to me. But I feel like, you know, kind of maybe they're banking on, you know, just a lot of, you know, it touching a lot of people the right way.
Well, my other thing that is pure speculation, but just watching Netflix in the marketplace and how they do business, I think they were really, really embarrassed that Hulu won Best Drama at the Emmys before they did. And they didn't fight hard enough for their shows in any years. And the problem is they had too many competitors in a lot of those shows. But they, if they had wanted to win, they should have put all their money behind Stranger Things. They split their money between Stranger Things and House of Cards that year, I'm pretty sure. But the point is, I think it is entirely a point of pride now. They, oh yeah, Hulu and Amazon can have the Emmys because Amazon has also won Best Comedy and Netflix has not yet won that. So, you know, Hulu, Amazon, they're small time. They're TV. They're at the Emmys. We're at the Oscars. Apologies for the cursing. And I think they just want to do it because they have so much money and they don't have to make a single penny back on Roma. It is all about that Best Picture trophy. 100%.
Well, there we go.
Which is annoying.
A little bit.
A little.
But on the other hand,
I don't like that, the movie's fine. It's really good filmmaking. You know, it's just like, it's like Boyhood.
Like, I love Boyhood. But it's, and that's part of why I love Roma.
It's just
Roma.
Like, I did not, you know, Boyhood I found way overrated. It's just kind of like, it doesn't kind of get, you know, I don't get it. And that's fine. It's totally cool.
I loved Boyhood and I loved Roma. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm so glad in some ways for Netflix because it helps stuff get made. It helps things like Roma get made and then also reach a broader audience than it ever would have in just a limited theatrical release. And so I love the idea of bringing art to more people and getting risky art made. So on the one hand, they are doing a lot of really good things. But on the other hand, they piss me off so much.
And there's a lot of people who come down on Netflix and, you know, and streaming services is not as good as a theatrical experience. But it's just like something I don't have a problem with, like, you know, and it's just me because I like streaming services. I like watching stuff on VOD. I feel like if you want people to watch your movie, put The Favorite on Hulu or something, even though it's got a bunch of, you know, have it be in theaters, you know, a week and then put it on Hulu or put it on, you know, VOD for kind of cheap so people can see these things. I think more and more, I mean, I hats off to Netflix, not for as much money as they put behind the thing, but for putting something like Roma on it. I mean, because that's got some gumption, some cojones.
And I would love all of the streaming services to look at how well the documentary strategy with streaming services and theatrical releases and then also airing them on television has worked. I would like to point out Minding the Gap, which is an excellent documentary that's totally going to lose to Free Solo, which I hear is great, but I refuse to see because I don't want to pay to close my eyes for 2 hours.
For RBG. I mean, RBG was on CNN. I mean, it was getting like, and then, you know, the Mr. Rogers documentary was on PBS. I think, you know, kind of that's a lot of things. I mean, we just had a lot of great documentaries this past year, and I think that's kind of different than a normal year. But they're taking these things and they're putting them on places where people can see them.
Exactly. Won't You Be My Neighbor and Minding the Gap. We're all on in theatrical releases, on television, and then coming to, and then streaming services. So PBS had Minding the Gap and Won't You Be My Neighbor on TV. And then HBO has Won't You Be My Neighbor coming, and Minding the Gap is on Hulu. And it's a great strategy. Unfortunately, none of them scaled a rock.
Oh, well, there
without
you
a rope.
Yeah.
That guy's crazy. He was at TCA. I'm just like, I also just made a facial expression on a podcast, but I was scared. I was scared in the footage they showed us.
I don't like heights either, so, you know, it didn't do much for me.
Okay, listeners, it's your turn. Who do you want to win at the Oscars? Who's your dream host? We want to hear from you. Let's talk about it on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod, or you can tweet at us directly. I'm at Brett Molina 23.
I'm at Brian Truitt.
And I'm at Kalawls, K-L-A-W-L-S.
And you can email us. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com. We'll wrap it up right here. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilot/producers of The Mothership this week, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss an episode moving forward, subscribe to The Mothership for free. While you're there, leave us a rating or a review. It helps other people find the show, and we always love your feedback. If Apple Podcasts isn't your thing, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, anywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find us. Don't forget, go to the USA Today app if you want more on the Oscars. There's a really cool AR experience there. You can check out some of the costumes from this year's Best Picture nominees. It's great. We've tried it. We love it. Check it out. Until next week, nerds out.
Later.
Bye.